When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
David Wells has pitched a perfect game. 27 up, 27 down. Baseball immortality for David Wells. And the Yankees win. The Yankees win.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
You know, I wasn't sure I was going to do Rodgers like here, but that audio clip. Can you find that? I'm sorry, Fleeks. That bothered me. I should have listened to all the Rodgers cuts. I saw some of them. That one just bothered me. So when asked if he's a distraction, do you know which one Marco just played? When he's asked if he's a distraction, because he got up on his soapbox, and again, I want to feel like I always have to preface this. I love that Aaron Rodgers is the quarterback in the New York Jets. I think you heard today from Connor Hughes and others who were there. He looked fantastic. He looks great moving around the pocket. He looks completely healed. He's got no restrictions. He threw the ball great. I still believe he has an excellent season in him, and I think he is going to lead a very young and talented Jet team to the AFC Championship and to a division title. Like I'm confident in that. I believe in Aaron Rodgers. I think the team believes in Aaron Rodgers. And as long as he's healthy, I think the Jets are going to win. But that doesn't mean I can't just sit idly by and listen to hypocrisy and not call it out. Because the guy's full of crap. Like, let's just be honest. Not necessarily with his takes. I don't care about his takes. I honestly don't. I don't care about his COVID takes, his vaccine takes. I don't care. All right? People make very good arguments in every different direction. Has he made some yeses? He said some stupid stuff. Yes, that's not even the point. The point is the guy got up there and complained about leaks and this and that, and we need to get rid of all the stuff out of this building. Like he was high and mighty and better than the Jets organization, and he's above the fray. And the idea that they need to cut all this crap out and only focus on winning, right? And then all the stuff happens. I'm going to get to in a second. And then he's asked in the after confirming that he almost retired to go run a dead campaign and be a potential vice president until November. Then he's asked, well, what about you and the distractions after you got on the team? And this was his answer. Please. And do we have it now?
Yeah, those are off-season things, and those are real opportunities. Mostly podcasts with friends of mine, and the Bobby thing was a real thing. How it got out there, I don't know. It wasn't from me. Once the season starts, it's all about football.
That is absolute nonsense and lies. I'm sorry. And I wasn't even going this direction until I heard that cut. That is such BS. I love you, Aaron. I can't wait to see you play, but that's just garbage. What do you mean it's off-season stuff and opportunities to do podcasts with your friends? You do Pat McAfee every week during the season, and you don't limit it to football, my friends. You don't limit it to football, Aaron. You talk about Jimmy Kimmel. You talk about Jeffrey Epstein. You talk about all kinds of stuff that has nothing to do with football or winning for the New York Jets. So please stop. That is not off-season stuff. Okay, this opportunity to become the vice president of the United States, I guess, was in the off-season. And it really wasn't. And let's be fair. Whatever you think of Bobby Kennedy, you know, I have no real strong opinions of the man. But whatever you think of him, he cannot win this election. I think that's fair to say. You weren't going to try and be the vice president. You were going to run for vice president and say, I don't know, give speeches, say things, stand there behind him, tip your cap and wave like the great Jimmy Dugan. I don't know what you were going to do, but it wasn't going to become vice president. So, yeah, and he said earlier, when given the choice between, he had two choices. He had two choices, very tough choices, too. Let's see. After rededicating my life to football after leaving the dark room last year and telling you how much I love it and how much I want to play for the next handful of years and how I've been rejuvenated by the Jets and I've worked my ass off to come back from an Achilles injury, I had two choices. I had the choice of retiring and trying to become vice president. And let me just paraphrase what that really means. Not try to become vice president, but go give speeches and do whatever and say things about Fauci for 3 months or 4 months until November. Or I could play football again, which I rededicated my life to. Like, the idea that was, you had some kind of choice. You did not have a choice. You had a couple of fun conversations while taking ayahuasca with Robert Kennedy Jr. And I'm sure they were very flattering conversations, and it might have even crossed your mind once or twice to actually go through with it, but it wasn't a real debate in your mind. Stop playing with us. And then don't get up there and say those are off-season things when you do Pat McAfee every week, whether you're healthy, whether you're not healthy, whether you're playing, whether you're not playing, whether there's anything to talk about with the Jets or whether there's nothing to talk about with the Jets, and you spend your time insinuating things, horrendous things about Jimmy Kimmel. Now stop it. Stop it. Take your own advice and just go out there and play football. Because I'll be honest with you, I'm in. I'm in. I'm like Robin Williams in Good Will Hunting. I'm in. But you don't want to do that, do you, sport? I mean, come on, Rodgers. Stop this. And I know you were asked the direct questions. I get it. You were at the facility. This wasn't on a podcast. You're asked directly by the media. I'm not trying to kill you today. But just that, I mean, come on. That's off-season stuff. Acknowledge the fact that you're part of it. Just say, you know what? Yeah, I guess I could do a better job too. That's it. That's off-season stuff. Playing golf with Joe Beningo was off-season stuff too. You didn't like it. It's unbelievable. The guy cracks me up. That clip annoyed me. That's off-season stuff. You do it every week with Pat McAfee. Are we losing our minds here? Did anybody follow up with off-season? You did it every week the entire year. You were on last off-season to this point. You did every week. You came on every week, gave updates on your health, and then said whatever you wanted to say. And God bless you. You're allowed to say whatever you want to say. But then don't say, well, that the team needs to do a better job with limiting distractions. And I'm certainly not one. I limit all my distractions to the offseason. What are you, crazy? No, I get it. In the offseason, you want to be vice president and game show host. I get it. Those things are offseason. I'll give you that. Your other aspirations besides football are off-season, but not distractions. Distractions are all year long, buddy. All year long. So go out there and play some football. And from what I heard, you looked fantastic. And I have no doubt. I'm telling you, I think the Jets are poised for a monster year. I thought it last year. I still think it this year. Call me crazy. I believe the Jets are poised for a monster year. I think Breece Hall is an incredible back. I think Garrett Wilson is an incredible wide receiver. I think the three of them are good enough right there to have a dynamic offense. Plus, you've added Williams. Plus, you've revamped the offensive line. The defense is young and talented as well. I trust the defense for the most part. There'll be games where they, you know, break your heart with a late drive that they give up too many yards on or whatever. But for the most part, I think the defense is it's not the 85 Bears, but it is a legitimately good defense. It might not even be the best defense in this league, but it's good enough to go win a Super Bowl. It's a damn good defense. It's a top five defense. It's a defense that you can win with on any level. And it's just a matter of that offense being good. And thankfully, they didn't fire Hackett in the offseason. I think that would have been a huge mistake. Thankfully, they didn't hire anybody over him. I think that would have been a huge mistake. Because right now, you want to talk about distractions? Wait until you get Aaron Rodgers on the podium every week telling you how great Nathaniel Hackett is, and it's nonsense they hired anybody else, and or, you know, I felt uncomfortable, or whatever the case may be. Like, that would have been, whose offense is this? I guess we have to answer to the man upstairs. Like, you don't think Rodgers is above saying that? Rodgers runs this freaking franchise. You can't go out and hire someone above his guy. Would have been a huge mistake. There's nothing else to do but just have blind faith in it. That's it. And hopefully you get repaid for it. But man, oh man, Rodgers saying that nonsense. Off season. All right. There's my piece. The Mets lose again in Cleveland. I mean, the offense scores some runs. You know, Hauser's not very good. Jeff McNeil, I have to give Jeff McNeil one potato. I've been killing him for a while, and rightfully so. I don't feel bad about it. I don't feel like I'm wrong. I don't feel bad about it. But I will say, yesterday, for whatever reason, I specifically tilted the argument to him not attempting to drive the baseball. I said, Jeff McNeil doesn't even try to drive the baseball. And then he proceeds to hit one off the wall and then hit one out. And then even on his, I think, his third or fourth at bat, he drives one all the way to the wall in center field for an out. So Jeff McNeil drove the baseball yesterday. Congratulations, Jeff. I'm happy for you. You still stink. And as me and Fliegel were talking about, maybe, just maybe, you can get hot enough to have someone actually want to trade for you because your contract's not terrible and you might be able to move it. That's about all you can hope for from Jeff McNeil. But again, I mean, this team just, as someone said it yesterday, I forget who it was, but it might have been BT because, you know, he's the other resident Met hater. They're on the verge of kind of becoming irrelevant here. And where all you Met fans are going to go, oh, you never talk about the Mets, McMahon, you loser, you never talk about the Mets. Yeah, because they're not the story. And the only story will be how they handle this trade deadline. That's where they're headed right now. And let me just say this. The debate is over. There is no more doubt. Vientos is your third baseman. I mean, watch his at-bats. He gets two hits in this game, a home run and a double. His swings are far better. He's slugging 720. I know it's a limited time here and a limited example. But he's got one less extra base hit than Beatty, and he's played in a fraction of the amount of games. I think it's 43-7 or 8 or something like that. Vientos has played 7 or 8 games. Beatty's played 43. Vientos has one less extra base hit. His at-bats are far better. I'm concerned about the defense, but right now you need the offense. This is not a platoon. This is Vientos is your third baseman, and Beatty occasionally gets a start against the tough righty or something. I mean, that's it. That's it. Or you send Beatty down for more work. I mean, probably never to be heard from again, although he does mash in AAA. And he probably will again, but I'm done. I mean, and that isn't just strictly on how bad Beatty's been. Now, he has been bad, but I think Vientos looks good. I mean, he's got real pop off the bat. I thought he got under that pitch. I mean, I knew he drove it, the home run. I knew he drove it and it was going to be close, but I thought he got under it a little bit, but he easily cleared the fence. I mean, he's got raw power. His swings look far better. And you know what? Sending Beatty down, especially, you know, to go get confidence at AAA because you know he hits well, and then bringing him back off a hot streak in AAA feeling good about himself sometimes helps these guys. And I think that's what, you know, Vientos was smashing in AAA. He's come up and produced at the major league level, and he's got a little bit of confidence. I mean, I know Lindor gave you two hits. He's still hitting 198. But Marte hits the home run. The offense does come up a little bit. You know, Diekman gives up the big hit. And, of course, then the news of rarely needing Tommy John surgery, which is difficult for this bullpen. He's been really good since they traded for him. He's a solid lefty out of the pen. And, you know, I guess people were, you know, the news was tough. He was getting second opinions. You figured this was coming. But I mean, right now, with Diaz in the condition he's in, and the rest of this bullpen that, I mean, you know, Reed Foley has done a really nice job. And obviously, Ottavino and Reed Garrett have done a very nice job. But you don't really have a closer at the moment because Diaz is lost. You've now lost Raley. Eventually, I just don't know if that bullpen's going to hold up. You're going to add Hauser to it, possibly. Great. Whoopee. I would put Budo back in the rotation. But ultimately, this Met team, it's just a bad team. They find ways to lose, whether it's the base running blunder in last game. The offense has just been dreadful. When you score six runs, you give up seven. I mean, it's the epitome. You give up they go back and forth with two run home runs in this game. It's just the epitome of what a bad team does. It's the epitome of what a bad team does. And they've now lost how many series in a row now? Four consecutive series. They haven't really played well since the turning point of the West Coast trip against the Dodgers. They took the first two games against the Dodgers. Since then, they've not played well. What's going back a month? 877-337-6666. But I definitely, Vientos is your now starting third baseman. There's no doubt about it. Val in the Bronx. What's up, Val?
Brother Mac, what's going on this morning? How you doing, Doug?
Good, buddy. How are you?
I'm all right. I want to talk some Yankees with you, but you said something about the Jets. I totally agree with you. We had these conversations before, and that's, again, say less. But I'm not even going to get into that. And yesterday we talked about the Knicks, right? I was at a loss for words. I guess what I was really trying to say is that I think the progressions that we've made and everything that we've seen over the last, three seasons, and more so especially the way it culminated with this season, kind of validated the process that Rose is going through. And I think that kind of earned the team the right to look at it more as, okay, I have something here. What do I need to add to it to make it exactly what I want and to maximize it? That was, I guess, the best way to put what I was saying. Because I after listening to what you were saying yesterday, after I hung up and then I went back and stuff like that, I think we're kind of on the same page. I'm just not ready to, blow everything up and just go for a while and say, oh, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I understand. I'm not ready to blow things up either. I mean, and especially now, if it sounds like, I mean, here's the thing. Like, if Brunson's going to give you this contract,
I didn't even hear that, so I don't even want to get into all okay. that stuff. I'm just talking about what we said last night because I got to a point where I was like, what was I saying?
You don't have to justify yourself. It's one phone call of a whole bunch, Val. So what do we got today?
But to get to the Yankees now, man, I'm not on a ledge. You know what I'm saying? And I hear what you're saying. This is not to say Seattle takes a series and they're better than us. I'm not even trying to go there, nothing like that. But what I will say is that, and while it wasn't necessarily the same thing, and I'm willing to give it to him only because of what he said in the post game. My thing was, once Torres hits the 3-run home run, because I know he probably had that kid Clay Andrews up before.
He did.
When it was 4-0.
Yes.
And, once he hits the home run, I think the plan at that point changes. That's my issue with it. And I think
no, I
he
agree.
Gets it too. He gets it too because in the post game, you heard him actually, and it was the first time I actually heard any, I don't listen to post games from a lot of other baseball managers, but it's the first time in a long time I actually heard somebody say, you know what, as close to admitting that it was a little bit of a mistake. He said that, and I was expecting.
He did. He said, I could have went to Ferguson. On hindsight, I probably should have.
I heard that, I'm sitting there, Torres is a home run. Same thing happened, and then the next inning we're coming through, and I hear Clay Andrews, and I'm like, who? What is this? Who is this guy? You never saw him. You haven't put your hands on him. You haven't even seen. You could tell me he looked at film or because the guy just got here. You don't know what he's doing. Don't put him in that situation. And to some extent, I feel like, it kind of hurts the kid too, because for everything that
he's already sent down now.
Exactly. And for everything that we talk about with the way that they can shape guys and bullpens, and who's to say, he goes down. They find something, they tweak something, and he probably comes back up 2-3 weeks later, and he's a different guy. I hear you with all of that. But when you put him in a moment like that, that's not getting the best, you know, it's not the most productive situation to try to get what you want out of them. It's not good for the whole thing.
No, but here's the thing. It is. It ruined the momentum there, but it's not why they lost the game. And one, they're not trying to get anything out of him. They're not trying to get anything out of him. He was going down. If he could have come in and pitched the rest of the game without giving up a hit. He was going to get sent down. They're bringing Canely up. That's it. They're not trying to get anything out of him other than save bodies. That's it. Save arms. They're down four runs. He's got them warming up because he likes the lefty matchup there. They're down four runs. The home run comes and he doesn't change the pitcher he's bringing in. You know, he used the typical, I like the lane there. He had Raley there, and then you turn, Raley, and then you turn Raley around to the right side, which is what he said in the post game, which you like him better from the right side. He was going to bring in a lefty. He's not trying to figure out the best ways to use Clayton Andrews. Clayton Andrews is an afterthought on this team. He's up because Hamilton went on the COVID list. That's it. You're not trying to figure out the best ways. He's trying to just save his bullpen. That's it. It's another arm in the bullpen. He did have him up here. You know where you're sending him down tomorrow, and we see that all the time with the Yankees. Either when guys first get called up, even if they know the stint isn't going to be long, they try and get him in there right away in the first game that they're up. And particularly if you know he's going to get sent down and you called him up and never used him, you'd like to get him into a game. That's how they typically do business. This wasn't about, hey, let's see if we can put him in a spot and get him going and make him a piece of this bullpen. He was getting sent down no matter what happened. This was strictly about saving arms. This is strictly about the long haul of the season, the nature of bullpen arms and how they can break down. The use that, you know, in every bullpen gets this time of year, the closer is certainly down after pitching 2 days in a row and giving up four runs yesterday, so you know you don't have Clay Holmes. Hamilton is on the COVID list. You could have went to Weaver or, you know, he brings in Birdie after Andrews, but you wanted to go with a lefty there. The argument was Ferguson, and you could have went with Ferguson. But Ferguson did pitch yesterday. Not a lot of pitches, but he pitched yesterday. If you bring him in or you bring Weaver in, now you lose them for the next game. And you're losing in the game. You're still losing. That game wasn't tied. The Gleyber Torres home run isn't tied. Doesn't tie the game. They're still down 4-3. Now, I still admit it's a mistake. I wouldn't have brought him in. I would have went to Ferguson. But you know what? If Ferguson gives up a home run, we're talking about who he should have brought in instead of Ferguson. Like, there's just no win if the guy gives up a run. That's it. He gave up a run, therefore Boone's an idiot. But in this particular case, I think it was a mistake to bring him in. Boone admitted such, but it's not the game changer. It's not why they lost. It squandered a little bit of momentum that the Gleyber Torres home run gives you, but the Yankees still don't score after that. You know, if the Yankees lose 6-5 and score two in the ninth, then you're like, geez, that really killed them, that home run. I don't know what would have happened if they don't give up a home run there, but, you know, they never tied the game. They were always losing. They were losing from the third inning on. It's not why they lost, but yeah, it was a bad mistake. But again, that's, you know, they do this over the course of the year. Watch every other game, all kinds of, you know, every manager makes mistakes. And I agree with you. I was surprised to hear Boone as bluntly. Like, he has said before, fair question. I guess I could have done that. But then he followed it up this time with, and in hindsight, I probably should have. Very rarely. Sometimes in interview, like long interview form, whether it's with Carton and Roberts a couple years ago, or he's been doing Talking Yanks the last couple of years. Sometimes in hindsight, a week later, like someone will ask him a question and he's been open to the idea. Yeah, I could have done that. Maybe I should have done that. But never really as blunt in the middle, like in the post game, right after the game, to say, yeah, you know what? I probably should have done that. And I don't know if that makes you happy or not, acknowledging the mistake. I mean, it's always good to admit the mistakes because then at least you recognize you made one and you'll react differently next time as opposed to thinking you did the right thing because then you're liable to do it again. But this is how they think. It's about saving this bullpen. And again, I'm sorry. You want to talk about the best. Like, I hear this a lot. Val just said it. Other people say it. Boone doesn't put the guys in the best chance to be successful. Like, that's not a spot for him. How do you expect him to come through in that? You're going to pitch him in that spot? You're going to do this there? Every year, Boone has been the manager. The Yankees have had one of the better bullpens in baseball, including this year. So at some point, he's putting guys in positions to be successful because they all have been. They all have been. Any manager, any team, you can point to a handful of games. Not one person has called me and said, you know what, that was a really good move moving Verdugo to the cleanup role. It really set the lineup off. I haven't heard a single person say that. Not one person has said, you know what, that was a good decision there. It helped win the game, you know, because they have the best record in all the American League. None of the wins has Boone impacted. Not one. But the losses are strictly at his feet. It's ridiculous. It's what we do with all managers, not just Boone. I just happen to be a Yankee fan, and it bothers me more than with other managers. Has he cost the Yankees games before? Of course. Has he won games for the Yankees before? Yes, he has. But we don't see it that way. Players win, managers lose. We'll say, oh, this bullpen guy stinks, this guy stinks, this guy stinks. But we'll never, in the moment, say he stinks. In the moment, the manager shouldn't have brought him in. Like, he has these guys in the bullpen. That's his given supply of pitchers to bring into a game. I mean, it's just, the guys you don't like, they should never pitch them. They should just sit there and you should do what, everyone should be Joe Torre and Scott Proctor and just throw him out there until his arm falls off and ruin his career. That's what they should do. Clay Holmes should pitch every single day. Again, didn't love the decision. Thought it was a mistake. He admitted such. But this is what you get over the course of a long season. And if you think these games are game seven, they're not. They're just not. This is not 100, as my guy Joe's McFly likes to say, he's big on the one of 162. It's fun to think that way, and we certainly react that way, but we can't expect our managers and our baseball teams to react that way. Otherwise, they'd be in a lot of trouble.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Well, the pass are close. They score! The Rangers take a 4-3 lead with 4:19 remaining. Long shift and the finish by Chris Kreider. A third period hat trick.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, 340, McMonagle here with you, 877-337-6666. Finally, the Rangers have come back from their hiatus. And we have a game tonight, back to playoffs. We need it. It sucks the Knicks aren't joining them, but the Eastern Conference Finals do await for the New York Rangers. And you know, first off, let's get to it because it's become a major talking point. And yeah, it's pissing me off. The Rangers are being completely disrespected in this series and in this Stanley Cup playoffs because they are of the four teams. Now, mind you, they won the President's Trophy. They had the most points in the league. They pretty much won their division wire to wire. They held off a damn good opponent in the Carolina Panthers. Oh, and by the way, they just beat the Carolina Panthers. And in my mind, they have the best goaltender in the NHL and remaining in this playoff. And yet still, the New York Rangers are underdog to the Florida Panthers in this series, as they were underdog to start the series against Carolina. And if you look at it, in every single sports book, I knew the FanDuel one because that's what I use, but I just pulled up every single book. The New York Rangers are the the biggest odds to win the Stanley Cup in every single book. They are deemed the most unlikely team to win the Stanley Cup by everybody. Bet365 has them at plus 350. FanDuel plus 380. MGM plus 350. Plus ESPN, I guess that is, whatever that is, plus 350. Was that Hard Rock plus 375? Bet River plus 375. The favorites are either the Stars at plus 230. I see the Panthers favored. The Panthers favored. The Panthers favored. The Panthers favored. And the Stars favored. And do you know why the Panthers are probably favored? Because they're playing the easiest of the bunch in the New York Rangers. Absolute garbage. This team has done everything you could have asked it to do. When it played a weaker opponent, it swept them. When it played the tougher opponent that they were supposed to lose to in the eyes of the bookmaker, they got out to a 3-0 lead and then pulled off a historic comeback to win Game 6 in their building, a building where Carolina plays really well in, and the Yankees, the Rangers, took 2 of 3 against them. 2 of 3 in Carolina. And yet they are being completely disrespected. They have the best goaltender. They have the firepower. They have Panarin, who's one of the best playmakers and one of the best players in the league. And the idea he's not a finalist for the Hart Trophy is ridiculous. If you know, Fox is dealing with it a little bit, but we're talking about one of the better, you know, offensive defenders in the entire league. Zibanejad is a proven scorer in this league, and Chris Kreider just pulled off a heroic Messier-like performance in Game 6 on the road, down 2 goals in the third period, staring a Game 7 in the face. And I know they've let up some scoring chances. I understand Igor's had to make a lot of saves, but damn it, that's what Igor does. And you're going to tell me they're underdog with home ice advantage against the Panthers? You're going to tell me that of all the teams left, they're the least likeliest to win a Stanley Cup? The hell out of here. I'm not going to hear it. I'm not going to pay attention to it. I'm not going to abide it. This Ranger team should not be underdog in this series. I don't know if they'll win it. Not going to guarantee victories. They shouldn't be underdog with home ice advantage, with Igor, with all their firepower, with the regular season they had. They should not be. After beating Carolina, who had the second most points in the East, already beating a team they were supposed to lose to. Sorry, I ain't buying it. I'm not. I know how good the Panthers are. I understand. I understand the goaltending will be better than it was against Carolina. I know that they've, you know, got, you know, guys who are legitimately, you know, good and tough, and it's going to be an all-out war out there. I get it. I don't expect them to take a 3-0 lead. I expect some more adversity. But man, oh man, the least likeliest? I don't have much. But I'm gonna put my money where my mouth is because I believe in this team. I do. I believe in this team. I believe in Igor. I believe in Panarin. I believe in Zibanejad. I believe in Trocheck, and I believe in Chris Kreider. I believe in this coach who I was just watching, and I have to admit, I fell in love with this coach a long time ago because hockey had waned a little bit for me. It's never been my absolute favorite. I've always, you know, I'm open. I'm a Yankee fan, then a Giant fan. And the Rangers have taken the third spot for me for years. The Knicks are, you know, creeping back into my heart with the way they played this year. I hope you heard me. I love this Knicks team. I love them. Please don't send me any more stuff. Please don't attack me on social media. I love this Knicks team. I love them. They're great. I love them. Thank you so much for a great season you gave us, Knicks fans. Thank you so much, Knicks. Hart, Brunson, thank you so much. You guys are the best. I love you. Nothing bad. I'm so glad you lost that series. Thank you. Thank you. But I fell in love with this Ranger team, and my my fandom really became on another level in 2012, watching the HBO show Road to the outdoor game. And it was the Flyers and it was the Rangers. And the head coach of the Rangers, who I love to this day and will always love, despite his craziness, Torts. I love John Tortorella. I love his press game press conferences. I love John Torts. And you know what? I really respected the hell out of Peter LaViolette coaching those Flyers. And I was just watching his famous speech to them after, you know, a game where they weren't playing well after the second period, and he just lays into them. It's awesome. And this coach has done a remarkable job. This team has done a remarkable job. And they are better than the fourth best option of the four final teams remaining. Absolute garbage. Now, we move to this series. And you know what? I mean, to me, it's pretty straightforward. Igor needs to be great. I expect him to. And the power play and the penalty kill need to be where they were in the last series, especially the penalty kill. Florida is one of the more penalized teams in the league. They're going to have opportunities on the power play. They've got to make them count. Because at some point, you have to just give in to the numbers. Most of these teams they're going to play, and certainly Carolina was, and I think the Panthers will be, a better 5-on-5 team. You have to limit the amount of chances. Igor's got to be great. You got to find a way to get some more scoring, which leads into what I'm going to play next. But ultimately, if you get on the power play, you have to score. And you have to kill off all their penalties, and they've done a remarkable job. The penalty kill has been on another world, and the power play has been deadly. And that's what's going to continue to have to happen. And that's why I want more scoring. And hopefully, if Hedl is healthy, and it sounds like he's a go for this series, I think he is the guy you have to play. I think he has to be in the lineup. I'm concerned for him. I don't know what happened in after the one game he played. If he didn't feel well, I'm assuming it wasn't stomach issues or a flu bug going around the locker room. I'm assuming he had more complications from his head injury, and that scares me. And I hope they're doing what's best for the young man. But if he's cleared to play by the doctors, I think he has to play because they need legitimate hockey players out there. But there is a former Ranger who disagrees with that sentiment. There is a former Ranger who has a different opinion on how the Rangers should start this series. And so I found it interesting. I saw it on his Instagram, or someone promoting it on his Instagram. I went back and listened to it. Unfortunately, it was right before the show, and I didn't have time to bleep out the curses, so I just straight up edited them. But trust me, he threw a couple F-bombs in there. He's very excited. The great former Ranger, Sean Avery, has an opinion. That's right, Sean Avery has an opinion on what the Rangers should do to start this series and how they should go about handling their business. Let's hear from Sean Avery on how he thinks the Rangers should start this Eastern Conference Finals against the Florida Panthers.
Eastern Conference Finals, New York Rangers versus Florida Panthers. Rempe, Rempe, Rempe. I need Matt Rempe in the lineup. I don't think it's the worst idea to send Rempe out to lay a beating on Sam Bennett in game one. We'll kill off the five-minute major. We will send a message that the New York Rangers are here for war. Because I can promise you, the Florida Panthers, they're not coming to New York to take in a Broadway show. Tkachuk, Bennett, Montour, Barkov, Bobrovsky, these guys are warriors. They want blood. They are not here to play a gentlemanly game. The New York Rangers are in a major battle. This is the toughest test that they have had. This team, we're going to see what this team is made of, but Rempe needs to be in the lineup. He needs to hold those guys accountable, and the guy has the secret sauce. The building's quiet. You put Rempe out there.
Listen to the garden, Joe.
They love him.
Chanting Rempe.
They love him.
He's going to score another big goal this series. Matteau.
Rempe. Rempe. Rempe.
I tell you what I feel. I know the truth. It's inside of me. Let's go, Rangers. Potvin sucks. Fatso forgot to shake my hand. Eastern Conference Finals. New York Rangers versus Florida Panthers. Let's go.
That's right. I completely disagree. And I don't know why. I completely disagree. Have you watched him? I am terrified he's going to take a bad penalty. And I understand, and I don't want to get into... I appreciate Sean Avery. I do. I appreciate Sean Avery. I loved him as a player. He still hung up on Brodeur not shaking his hand. I love it. And I understand what he's saying. And I know I played it because I've heard it from a lot of you Ranger fans. And I know that a lot of you feel that way. And I'm sorry. And I don't need to get into all of the narrative of what hockey is. And, you know, fighting is part of the game. I'm not trying to knock fighting. I get it. But the idea that you believe that the New York Rangers, instead of putting the best players out there, the best overall players, like a Hedl who can turn that third or fourth line into something where they're a danger to the Panthers, where they can score, where his speed, everything he brings, the dynamic he brings and actually is a hockey player and provides more, you know, danger up and down the lineup and more athleticism and more ability up and down the lineup of this Ranger team, that you would rather just have some goon out there who should run out to start the series and start the game and just punch people in the face. Because we need to show that it's a war. I'm sorry. I know that's like, A lot of the overarching theme from a lot of Ranger and hockey fans, I think it's absolutely nonsense. I want to go out there and win on the scoreboard. And of course you got to be tough. Of course you got to go out there and play hard. And of course it's going to be a, you know, quote unquote war in the terms of sports. Of course. We know this. And they got to be ready for it. But I'm not playing some lesser player who the coach doesn't trust to play in big moments, who plays 4 or 5 minutes a night, because I might need to go out there and set some sort of message. You know where I send the message? On the damn scoreboard. I mean, I don't understand this idea that you have to go out there and like have someone who can rain down punches from 7 feet in the air. Like, yeah, there are other physical sports. Football's physical. And yeah, you want to go out there and set the tone with your physicality. Sure, you don't need the one crazy man to go out there and start swinging his helmet around. And I'm not taking, you know, the idea that he could get we'll kill the 5 minutes. Okay, you sure? I think you need to go out there and play the best hockey players you can. That's it. And Rempe ain't it. And I know he gets the crowd going and everything else. I understand what Sean's saying. But I'm looking for the best hockey players I can find. And Philip Hedl is far better and makes this team better. I want to score goals. I want to be dynamic. I don't want to go out there and be, you know, like, yeah, I got to be physical. And listen, if there's a point in the series where I feel they're making runs at Panarin or they're making runs at Zibanejad and they think they're, you know, and they're playing, you know, dangerous hockey and they're risking hurting my players and I have to go to Rempe because I feel like we've gotten to that point, fine. But I think the narrative of you need to go out there and punch them in the mouth and don't worry about the 5 minutes. I'm very worried about the 5 minutes. I don't want to be behind 1-0, 2-0. I want to take it to them and score some goals. I want to win on the scoreboard. I didn't play hockey as a youth. I'll be completely honest. It's the one sport I didn't play. Wasn't very good on rollerblades. Wasn't very good on ice skates. But I'll never understand this idea. Sure, if Sidney Crosby is going to get pounded, you got to have someone on the Penguins to go out there and make sure you got someone to defend him on some level. I'm not putting Rempe in this series where he takes bad penalties, doesn't get trusted on the ice because I might have to go out there and show that it's war. No! Philip Hedl needs to be in the lineup. I did find the audio entertaining, though. And it's nice to just see Sean, the maniac that he was and is. 877-337-6666. But the New York Rangers will start tonight. Game number one of the Eastern Conference Finals. Playoffs are back. And they need to show up. This is a huge game for the New York Rangers. Huge game. You do not want to fall behind in the series. You do not want to lose home ice. They've been so good in this building other than one lousy game five. And I expect them to be good. I expect them to show up. Hopefully the layoffs help Fox a little bit. Hopefully they go out there and they're fast and they're explosive and Igor's at the top of his game, because if those things happen, if the power play's dynamic, if the penalty kill's been what it's been all postseason, and you skate the way they can skate, and Panarin plays his game, and Zibanejad plays his game, and Kreider's there in front of the net, if they do what they do, they're going to win this series. Oh, yes. They're going to win this series. And the idea that they're the least likeliest team to win the whole damn thing is disrespectful. And the Rangers need to take it as such.